Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by Carlos Simon, who has a brand new amazing album called Requiem for the Enslaved. It's going to be an album that hits Spotify and all, you know, all sorts of platforms on June 17th, right before the Juneteenth weekend. Hey, Carlos, thanks so much for joining us.
It's so good to be here, Jason. Thank you for having me.
All right. Tell me the idea behind Requiem for the Enslaved. I know it has a lot to do with the lesser known history of Georgetown. That's only recently Georgetown University. That's only recently coming to light. So tell me about sort of that, the bit of a darker past there.
Sure. Well, you know, as a faculty member, I'm on staff at but as a professor at Georgetown University, I was hired there in 2018. And I wanted to do my due diligence, you know, and really discovering and learning the culture of Georgetown. And, you know, as a professor, you know, learning this history that of Georgetown, you know, it was founded by Jesuits and Maryland Jesuits. And of course, this past of owning people and selling women, children. In 1838, there was a large sale of 272, one of the largest. And so I wanted, as a Black man, I really felt like I wanted to write something that responded artistically to what happened, and especially being on as a faculty member at Georgetown. So the piece is dedicated to these men and women who were sold as property by the Jesuits who founded Georgetown University.
And tell me, how many was it?
272 in that particular sale. There were more, but in that year alone, there were that many.
Wow. And this was by the actual founders of the university itself, the Jesuits.
Correct.
Talk about just the basic irony of that. You know what I mean? Like, Jesuits supposed to be, you know, holy people trying to push us in a righteous way. Well, not much different, you know, founding fathers saying, you know, God we trust, all men created equal. And then all the, you know, these progressive ideas of the time in so many ways, but then right underneath it all, undercutting it and making it hypocritical in a way, is they're owning people and selling human lives. I mean, just speak to how just the dichotomy of that. It's kind of unreal to think about.
You know, and it is. And I one of the things that I wanted to do is to try to find the humanity in this, you know, what was happening, you know. So Georgetown has a really, they have amazing archives, you know, so that actually I went to see the bill of sale that had these people listed and their ages and, you know, their relation to each other. So you, in the archives, you would see Isaac, 64 years old or whatever the age was, and you see ran away, right? And so, and then below that, you see Betty, Isaac's daughter, 16 years old, you know, and so the humanity in it, so the relationship. But the fact that, you know, the Jesuits were, they were, of course, you saw it's very hypocritical to have this religion that speaks about, you know, people being equal under God's eye, and but yet they owned slaves and they sold, you know, people. And so that was really hypocritical. But I wanted to focus more so on the side of the people that they were sold. You know, these were humans. These were people that you know, that are important into our American history. And so another thing that I did, I went down to Maryland, Louisiana, where they were sold. Most of them were sold at plantations in Maryland, and talked to some of the descendants there. And so really understanding the history and how this affected people, not just in that generation, but generations that preceded them or succeeded.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's just powerful stuff and eye-opening stuff. And it's shocking as you peel back that onion and you discover the actual history, but it's important. I mean, talk, I want to get to the actual music in a second, but just to wrap up sort of this thematic idea that we're talking about all the history and the themes and everything. Address people that might be that, you know, that maybe aren't like you and I. You and I are like, oh, let's reveal the full history. Let's learn the full history because it is history. Speak to, you know, some listeners that are more hesitant of the other side that might be like, I don't want to learn about this. It's too troubling to learn about it. Or why are you teaching? But I always tell them we're not like teaching some magical alternate history that we made up. This is the actual history. We need to learn what actually happened. I mean, speak to why it's our history and we need to learn it.
Yeah. And you said it right. It is a part of our history and our collective American history. Right. And it's important for us to understand where we have come from in order to where we are, to understand where we're going as a country, and to understand the role of slavery and how it's shaped our society, how much the country has been built on the backs of people of color, African Americans, most specifically, and how that really shapes our everyday lives, you know, and systematically how racism plays into our system of our way of life here in this country. So I think that the piece is just one facet of understanding how we live, you know, how we gotten where we are. And the arts have that ability to I think, has basically a common ground, you know, musically speaking, it provides some sense of understanding on the artistic level. And I think listening to this piece and understanding the history, I think will help us to navigate, you know, our everyday lives and understanding, okay, this is not just a piece of music. It's something that will help, hopefully, grab a better understanding of the way I view our society. And that was the hope, you know, understanding not only really reflecting on the lives of those enslaved, but also understanding the lineage of systematic racism and how it's shaped from slavery.
Yes. And a lot of what we see going on today is a direct result of that. And if we don't learn the history, we're doomed to repeat it. And so, yeah, I've always been of the mind there is no past, present, or future. I mean, it all is in conversation with each other. It's, you know what I mean? Like it's all influence. It's cyclical and we'd be fools not to learn from both the good stuff and the bad stuff. We got to learn from it. Well, cool. Thanks for doing such a deep dive on, you know, the history and the thematics, you know, the weight behind this, but let's talk, you know, put on your musicality hat for a second, like in terms of an album, you know, if you could try to tell us, you know, maybe what the instrumentation is used or how the album is structured piece to piece, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, think about the Requiem in itself. It's this very traditional art form. Mozart has used it, you know, the composers like Verdi and Berlioz, they've all used this art form as a means of honoring the dead, the Requiem. And so actually the Requiem is a part of the Catholic music tradition. And so I wanted to use the art form. But instead of honoring one person who died, but rather a group of people, like those enslaved. So Requiem for the Enslaved, that's where it comes from. And Jesuits, you know, think about the Jesuits who founded the school. They practiced Catholicism and, you know, use this art form of the Requiem, the Mass, a very traditional musical form. And so that was my way in to the piece and understanding its history. So I use some musical excerpts, you know, from all the way back to Gregorian plain chant, but also embed or combine the African-American spirituals with these Gregorian chants, if you will. And then we also use a hip hop spoken word, you know, to kind of project the text, the Lord have mercy and Kyrie eleison and you know the introit. These are all sections in the traditional mass, a Requiem mass. But I've enlisted my good friend Marco Pave, who serves as the Georgetown artist in residence, to craft some text that would be appropriate, you know, for not only serving the text for Requiem Mass, but also, you know, serving the African-American tradition of spirituals, but also rap and the spoken word, which is a relevant, you know, art form for today. So you have two different worlds, right? Kind of together with a collective vision of honoring those enslaved.
Sounds fantastic. That's the stylings of it. But remind me who all else is playing on it with you. Cause I know, I guess you're doing, I guess, the piano, but you got some hip hop, you got some trumpet, you know, shout out to some of your fellow artists that are on the album.
Yeah. So we have Jared Bailey, who is also known as MK Zulu, who is a DC native. He's playing trumpet. Of course, Marco Pave, who I mentioned just now, is a hip hop spoken word artist. We have, Hub New Music. They're based in Boston, but their ensemble is it's flute, violin, cello, and clarinet. So very, and of course I'm playing piano. So you have, you know, it's a wide variety of instrumentation there, and the styles is, it ranges from like a Gregorian chant, like I mentioned, to hip hop spoken word, to some jazz influences there too. Then and so it's, you get a wide range of musical styles.
Awesome. Well, I have plenty to work with in terms of this album. But I guess before we run, I'd love to know a little more about your own personal story. You know, obviously you say you're a professor at Georgetown University now, but how did you get there? You know, let's start. I mean, where did you grow up? I guess I should ask. And how did you get into music?
Well, I grew up in Atlanta, Jason, and my dad's a preacher. And I that's how I started into music. You know, I come from a very musical family. My dad started his church in Atlanta in 1996. And of course, he needed a musician. He needed, you know, ushers, and he needed, you know, people to help serve in the church. And of course, I was part of that the musical staff, right? So
right.
I learned to play by ear, you know, in service. And that's where I heard gospel music, and that's where I heard spirituals, and later I learned how to read music and college and high school. And so, but I've always kept the tradition of the church in my life. And so doing this piece, it felt like I was at home. We actually recorded the piece in a studio that was turned, you know, it was a church at one point. And so like it recording the piece, wow. It really felt like I was at home in my dad's church in a way. So,
and where was that? Where was that church converted studio? What city?
It was in Boston.
Boston.
Yeah. Gotcha. We recorded over the pandemic in May.
Gotcha. Is that where you, do you live in Boston, as well as, or do you commute back and forth? Or do you live in DC when you're teaching at Georgetown?
I live in DC. It was convenient for us to record in Boston because Hub New Music, they're based in Boston, and it was easier for me to just and Marco and I just to take a train up and record there.
Gotcha. Well, cool. So what brought you to DC then? Was it the teaching position at Georgetown?
It was, yes. I was hired there at Georgetown and subsequently got the position at the Kennedy Center as composer in residence. So yeah, that's DC's home.
Awesome. And just real quick, this is just so I have all my, you know, details when I write the article with this. What classes do you teach at Georgetown?
I teach music composition. I also teach history of film music, history of sound and music in film. Sorry.
Now we're talking. Now we're that's my bag, baby. Film music. Now we're talking.
Fun class, I love it. And yeah, those are the two main classes in music theory.
Awesome. And then, so you, I guess you're your title, assistant professor of music?
Correct.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Just want to make sure I had that. And then, in terms of the Kennedy Center residency, when did you get that? What sort of stuff have you, you know, written as part of that? I like to know sort of the dates and details on that.
Sure. So I started my residency last April. So 2021 April, and since then I've done a lot of work with, you know, writing opera for the Washington National Opera premiere last March. I was a part of the Written in Stone project. The National Symphony has premiered several works of mine, including a piece called Tales, which is inspired by African American folk tales. Have collaborated with illustrator Mo Willems and making one of his well-known books, Pigging the Elephant, I Really Like Slop, out of an opera, right? So we named that Slopera. So, and that's just 1 year. So we have a lot more work to do. It's a 3-year a residency, and I'm really looking forward to the work I'm going to do.
That's so awesome. And then one other just little trying to get the detail, going back and get the details on stuff you were saying. You said your dad was a preacher in Atlanta. What kind of church was it? What denomination? It was Baptist or what are we talking?
Black Pentecostal.
Black Pentecostal. Okay. And do you have the name of the church? I like to actually give the proper names in the article.
Sure. Galilee Way of the Cross Church.
Galilee Way of the Cross Church. Okay, cool. And then perfect segue into, you know, the Georgetown University founded by Jesuits. Yeah. Okay, cool. So it all ties together. You made it easy for me. Anything else we should say before we run? I guess just in closing, I always like maybe pretend I'm not here. Pretend you're talking directly to the listeners, you know, hey guys and gals, here's why kind of thing.
Hi, I'm Carlos Simon, and I hope you will listen to my new album, Requiem for the Enslaved, on all platforms.
And awesome. And remind us when it releases and on what, it's Spotify and what else?
It will be streamed on all musical platforms, Apple Music, Spotify, on June 17th.
Great. And then are there any plans for a live concert performance of this, or is that still in the works, or it's still in the dream phase, or where's that?
It's we're not sure on a date yet, but it will be in the fall here in DC, whether at Kennedy Center or somewhere else, but I'm pretty sure it will be at the Kennedy Center. We're working on a date now.
Awesome. Well, pick up the, you know, digitally pick up the album, listen to it, stream it on June 17th. That way, you know what we're talking about, and get yourself ready for when you actually do announce the live concert. So there you go. All right. Hey, thanks so much for doing this, Carlos. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Take care now.